Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today we are meeting Clemson Turgano. He is running for State House District 33, which covers Spartanburg. It's a district of about 42,000 people, 47% women, 74% white, 17% black, and 4% Hispanic. Clemson, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thanks, Grace. I certainly appreciate it. It's wonderful to be here today.
What do you think is the biggest issue in facing your district right now?
Wow, the biggest issue is probably education, followed quickly by the business environment. There's one more interesting nugget about District 33 that catches people unawares, and that is it's one of the few districts in the state of South Carolina that has no incorporated area. And that creates a unique environment for governance. It creates a unique environment for business generation and also for making sure everybody's represented well when it comes to schools.
Tell us what in your life has prepared you to be a state legislative leader.
There's a couple of things. First is I'm a small business owner here in the state of South Carolina. So I have gone through all of the hoops that's required to start a business in South Carolina and also seen that it's such a business-friendly state and how we might be able to create a state that is not only business-friendly, but is attractive to business. People want to come here and not just big businesses. We're so proud of the Volvos and the BMWs and the Scouts that have come here. I'm talking smaller businesses that really make up our economy, making it comfortable for them and making sure they have the talent that they need. So being a small business owner is really important. The second thing that helped prepare me for being a state legislator is I'm a veteran. I'm a 24-year Army retiree. And although I was a tank officer, I was also a teacher at West Point in the Naval War College. When I was on operations, many of the times the role that I would play was someone who would go out and work with other armies, work with the people in the area, work with different regions, and basically build collaboration and build democracy in that area. And that's something I'm really proud of. And that's something I'm looking forward to taking in as a state legislature.
You mentioned you're a small business owner. I feel like we've had success as a state with manufacturing jobs. But when it comes to more of the gray and white collar jobs, and this goes back to education, what kind of legislation do you think we need to attract some of the higher level jobs? And what are the other components the state needs to attract those types of jobs?
Great question. And it's a real issue facing the state. It's interesting that we need legislation that reinforces positive learning environments. We also need legislation that reinforces respect for teachers and helps teachers earn a competitive wage. Yes, we've got wage increases that are coming. And quite candidly, it's a wage increase that probably should have happened about 10 years ago. Glad it's happening now. It doesn't really make us competitive with other states. When we have a competitive wage and we have teachers who are being paid well, respected in a positive learning environment, that creates an environment businesses want to come into. As we are attracting those gray and white collar types of talent, they want strong education environments for their children. They want an excellent context for cultural activities as well. And of course, they want the natural environment that they can get out and get into that's very important to them. The key thing with education is to reinforce the role and respect for teachers, but also we need to reinforce STEAM teaching. We need to reinforce collaboration in the schools, and we need to reinforce challenging conversations because that's where the learning happens. My experience as an educator, those conversations where you really challenge students and they really get into it, they're really learning and they take that back home. And then they have those conversations with their parents and the parents see that they're really getting value out of the educational system.
From an infrastructure standpoint, how do you see the state as a whole and then also your district ensuring that water, sewer, roads, housing, good schools are all there to actually attract those types of jobs?
My district is almost entirely the southern part of Spartanburg County. And it's really interesting when you drive from Clifton, Glendale down to Pauline and into Cross Anchor, you run out of cell service. So we need better cell service in the district, and that will attract businesses. As you drive down that same Route 56, you find out as you're talking to businesses that high-speed internet is really difficult to get in certain areas. And we've got a couple of fairly large chicken farms as well as other farming communities that need to do business and do trades and do it very quickly, and they don't have broad high-speed internet. And then if you drive 56, I know of three bridges on that road right now that require repair. We've got to repair that road, and we need to make that road the southern corridor into Spartanburg. You get off 56, it's a beautiful drive. And what we need to do is we need to make sure the bridges are fixed, that the road is clear and is basically up to specs. We have a real challenge with childcare for people who are working in Woodruff, people who are working in Packlet, people who are working at the new BMW plant. And that's going to be a key part of attracting business in the southern part of the district as well.
When you talk about the different parts of your district and it's unincorporated, how does that work?
We have some terrific county councilmen, David Brett, Justin McCorkle. Those are the two county councilmen that oversee basically the southern part of my district. Mm-hmm. And I know Shane Martin works to support the district as well. And basically, that's how it works. One of the things that I'm doing is I'm reaching out to a couple of societies that are strong in these areas. There are churches that are strong, and I'm really getting some really nice responses from pastors that I reach out to talk to just about the questions you're asking. What are the challenges facing the district? How can we address these challenges together? One of the reasons that I wanted to run was the opportunity to serve. You build this desire for service when you're in military service. You find out that you can really help people. And I've missed that over the last few years. And I want to provide that service again, really help people find out what is needed. And that's how I found out about childcare. So as we are looking within the district, it's neighborhoods, it's townships, small organizations, and churches are things that I'm reaching out to.
So just a little bit about the seat. Travis Moore is the incumbent. He's been in that seat since 2020. Mm-hmm. How do you feel as a Democrat running in a Republican-leaning district?
There's a couple of pieces to that. First, I'm for a free, smart, and strong South Carolina. Free is all about having choice. One of our challenges across the state is that we are not giving voters a broad enough or serious choice when it comes to remarkably challenging policy issues across the spectrum. I want to offer that choice. The second thing is this district is changing. We've had a significant influx from people from outside the state in a couple of areas in the district. I'm not sure that we've fully tapped into all of these new voters that have come into our district. And my goal is to knock on every door that I can knock on and talk to them about a free, smart, and strong South Carolina. And in that way, honestly, I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. What I'm looking for are people who want to move South Carolina forward and want to meet in the middle and have that conversation. That's really important to me.
So here's the lightning round. This is where you stand on these hot button issues. One is you disagree strongly. 10 is you fully agree with the current legislation. Okay, number one, heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
One.
School vouchers for all.
One.
The open carry legislation that just passed.
Three.
A transgender care banned for minors.
One.
Critical race theory in schools.
Sorry, that's really a complicated question because I don't believe there's critical race theory in schools.
Term limits for state house and state senate.
Six.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion legislation.
One.
How judges are currently chosen through the committee.
I'm going to say 5 on that one.
And then lawyer legislators on the committee.
That's a 3. I've got to have somebody convince me of that.
That's all the questions for you, Mr. Chirigano.
Today, we are joined by Greg Ford, who is running for the House of Representatives, District 98. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Hanging in there, just trying to get through this campaign.
Tell us about your district.
Our district is actually along Dorchester Road. It runs west of the Air Force Base, or actually Ashley Phosphate Road. And it runs right along Dorchester Road up to Trolley. And then it catches just a little bit of Bateson's Bridge. So it'll get Ashboro East up in that area. And then it goes all the way back down Ladson, Trolley to Patriot, catches just a little bit of Patriot Boulevard back there.
And so the incumbent, Chris Murphy, who has been there since how long?
14 years.
14
this would be
years.
Seventh cycle.
You primaried him before in 2022, and he won by approximately 1,000 votes in the general election, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
You're doing it again. What makes you want to do that?
My initial run last cycle was after COVID, and I started seeing some significant changes in my daughter that was in public school. So I started watching some things along those lines. And then I'm fully retired from the military, and watching what was going on is something that I actually serve to help other countries overcome. So certain things such as the dampening of her voice, freedom of speech, conformity, submissiveness to certain things such as vaccinations, maskings, things along those lines. The ideological stuff started bleeding in to different things when she was coming home from school, which that significantly bothered me as a parent. I feel that me as a parent is the one that gets to teach my kids morals and ethics versus a teacher or someone else like that. As a retired military member that served just over 20 years, I wasn't going to stand to the side and watch things go sideways in our own country. So you asked if what I was going to change this time is last cycle I ran, we had four of my folks that worked with me in the military that I trusted highly, and we worked with them solely on a campaign, none of us being political, and that's what we were able to achieve. This time, I have a significant team that has stepped up to help in different areas, and we are pushing forward with them as a team.
Got it. Okay. So talk to me then specifically, what do you think the biggest issue is in your district?
So our biggest issue, the number one thing that everyone talks about, absolutely the very number one thing, is our infrastructure, our roads, our overdevelopment, our building, and we can't get around. Constant congestion of roads in our area. Second issue is taxation. We just had some increase in taxation for utilization or usage tax. We just had our gas tax re-implemented. That affects everyone in the state. And then we also had Somerville that just went and raised the millage of our housing. So taxes is another one. And then the third thing I hear is school systems. Our parents are actually pushing for this school choice, but we haven't addressed the root cause, which is the actual school system and why we're struggling to even maintain anything outside of the 40s. Right now, we're 43. That's the three things that I hear nonstop from almost every person I speak with.
Do you think that those are the issues that would translate for you as the biggest issue statewide, or do you think there are other issues as well?
On a statewide level, that's a whole different ballgame there. We have so many other things going on we need to address, and some of it's infrastructure-based as well. We're starting to hear some grumblings about Scout Motors coming in and Google. That's a significant amount of our tax money that was spent. We're starting to hear Dominion Power and Santee Cooper. Neither one has the infrastructure or the grid to power these guys. So we're now going to start putting a damper on our development from housing because we can't produce the power for the houses and the industries at the same time. The few jobs that they brought in is now going to potentially cost our taxpayers even more money to get the capacity up to where we can power these companies. So that's on a state level issue. And then there's some other minor things, such as I'll use the words woke agenda throughout our state. That's creeping in quite a few places. And we need to start focusing on what I consider the basics, raising our kids right with some sort of values. Each individual has their idea of what their values should be, and we need to focus on that.
So if you had a magic wand, what is a policy that you would change immediately to address one of those things?
So my number one item that I would address is taxation. Day one, I will figure out how to get a bill written, formulated properly to completely zero out our state income tax. The reason I say that is for the last few years, we have had an excess of state funds at the state level. 2 years ago, it was $4.8 billion, I believe is what the number was. This year, we still have an excess, but they funded our reserve account, and then they refunded over $1 billion to taxpayers as homeowners, I believe is how they're doing it. And then the 0.5% tax income rebate, which is going to be 6.5%. If we take some of that money and actually put it back into the pockets of South Carolinians, we can actually grow our economy. If we look at some of the studies such as solo economic development theory or the neoclassical theory of economic growth, either of those suggests that if you reduce 1% on your taxation of your citizens, you invest in your infrastructure and technology and knowledge of your people, your human assets, it'll actually grow your economy by 0.8% within a 2 or 3 year period. And these are studies that was done all over the world by PhDs over periods as long as 40 years. And they actually watched how these things develop. So the very first thing I would do was I would get rid of our taxation on our income and look at other areas that we can adjust by.
Let's lean into this infrastructure point, because I think you've brought it up a couple different times in terms of there's an excess in money. Maybe some of that is invested in our infrastructure. It certainly is an issue that you talked about in your district. Can you get more tactical on how you think we could address some of these infrastructure problems more quickly?
So on my district, we have a crazy amount of development happening in our area. I think Greenville, Myrtle Beach, and Charleston are the top three, and I believe Charleston is number two in the state. We have all these developers coming in here building all these houses, and we haven't done much with the roads or our power system or our water system. We have issues up here in Somerville for water runoff from storms. We have roads that flood out. We have houses in our area that are flooding out because we did the cap and build, go into the wetlands and build a foot above whatever our water level is now. Once you start building all these concrete palaces or putting roads in or driveways or impervious surface, we actually have dampened some of our areas for our water or our actual environment to do what it's naturally made to do. We have some money that was allocated or earmarked. If you look through the Ways and Means slides, they have quite a few areas that they want to increase some of these infrastructure items. But our problems, one, we're actually correcting our issues. So now we have the accordion effect. Two, we have some regulations that is hindering the money getting to, let's say, the roads. Like my opponent said, he brought some money back from the state. But our problem is that money is somewhere and we don't have the infrastructure work happening because there's too many red tape hurdles that they need to jump through to get those roads, particularly in the works. Mm-hmm. Power grid, same way. We have regulation that is going to keep them from getting that power grid fixed now. So we're going to pay for it as citizens in these areas. So let's go back to my opponent. Chris missed 2 years ago, 43 or 46% of his time in his session. Every one of those times was an opportunity to go get funding to bring to our area. We had an open seat as well. Mandy Kimmons resigned, so we had an open seat while we had a special election. So that's two of our five representatives from our area that's completely out. So we had no representation in those areas where we could have brought some of that money back. While we are the number two largest growing areas in the state, but we're not getting the support from the state, even though our tax dollars are collected. So we need to figure that portion out, and we need to manage growth in some way, shape, or form. And it needs to be responsible growth. But here's the problem. At the state level, I won't have control over that. That is a county function. Mm-hmm. What I can do is make sure we have the funding or appropriate funding, because these are state maintained roads or state regulation that are hindering some of these other entities from developing. So that's where I can help at the state level and just showing up and making sure you're part of whatever's going on to help and represent. I tell everybody you can't represent if you're not present. So that's one of my biggest challenges.
Greg, I haven't asked this to anybody else, but Grace and I have talked about this on the podcast before. This is basically a part-time job where you make $10,000. What do you think about the idea of making being a legislator a full-time job for South Carolinians?
I think it should be a full-time job. That is one aspect that I will support. What I will not support is our current situation where we do not have an option for a recall or a removal process of said representative. So if I go in there and make this a full-time representative position, it would have to be, let's say, $100,000 a year, whatever the number would be, because no one's going to do it for $10,000 full-time.
Correct.
They're just not going to do it. So the number one thing I would say is if they want to make it a full-time position, that's great. It's going to come with term limits if it's up to me, and it's going to come with a recall option to where when someone like my opponent doesn't show up for 40% of the time, we now start taking his money back, our money, the taxpayers' money, back from his pay, and we remove him.
That leads us straight into the lightning round. So I am going to list off a couple of different issues that are happening in South Carolina, and we're going to do this on a 1 to 10 scale. 1 is totally disagree, 10 is fully agree. You can answer any number on that scale. So let's start with heartbeat bill and 6-week abortion ban.
I believe life starts at conception. Society is not fully in line with Greg Ford. The heartbeat bill, as it's written, I say it's a 9.
What about school vouchers for all?
School vouchers for all is a nice gesture to the parents because we want school option. I'm going to put that at a 2 because it does not address the root cause, which is driving the desire for school option.
Got it. Okay. What about the recent open carry law that was passed?
I put that at a 9/10. I am a firm believer of the Second Amendment. There's one sentence or one paragraph that I do not agree with constitutional carry, but the overall, yes.
Critical race theory in schools.
I 100% disagree. History needs to be taught as it is written without a single race or gender or subgroup as the focal area. Because if we start creating this, we're going to trend towards history at some point. It might not be the same race. It might not be the same gender. It may be something different.
Social emotional learning.
So I disagree with having SEL in there as written because it is an umbrella that allows some of the woke ideology to bleed into our school system. I disagree with it.
Okay. What about term limits for state house and state senate?
100% needs to happen.
What about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives?
So DEI is a very tricky situation because we have part of that in the Constitution. All men are created equal. So we have to have some equality. Equity and inclusion, we are now trending towards not looking at the merits of the individual versus what they're being afforded or whatnot. Equality, I agree with. We're all created equal, but you need to have selection in certain instances on merit.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
I disagree with it 100%. My opponent, his brother's a judge, his wife's a judge. They tried to get her on the Supreme Court of the state of South Carolina. He was a judiciary chair when all this was going on. He now has friends that are in the Judiciary Committee, which selects, screens the judges, and then they offer 3 to the General Assembly for approval voting. So it needs to come back to either the governor suggest and the... This is a tricky one. If the governor is a Republican, I think this is 100%. The governor is a Democrat, we could go the opposite way. It could be a hindrance because that might not run with our ideology. It needs to go to the governor for recommendation and then go to the assembly for approval. Or it needs to come back down just like I'm being elected and the individuals in the district select the judge that they would be standing before if they're in the judicial system. And there's also no recall option for them as well.
All right, Greg, if your constituents are listening, what is the one thing that you want them to know about you as a takeaway?
I'm a fresh set of eyes looking at these challenges in a different view. As a combat veteran, a third generation military veteran that's retired, going to a doctoral of education at Charleston Southern, and a farmer, I have a small farm, so I have quite a vast background to pull from. I will bring everything I can. I'm not a politician. I'm not a lawyer. I have nothing to gain from this other than make sure I can stand up and look at my daughter in the eye and say, and my son, and say, I tried to do something to help you get the same opportunities I was afforded when I was younger and actually set the foundation for my grandkids or future generations. We will add everyone else's children in that as well to make sure this isn't about me. This is about the future of what we have in the state of South Carolina and our country, as a matter of fact. And I will put 100% into this using my moral and ethical compass that I will not waver from. I'm not trying to do this as a career politician. I want to make a difference now.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.